it's really the time when our kids are little is the most intense. And it is the time when we do need breathing space. We need a regular breathing space from it. And I think that's really, really vital. So hold that as your North Star.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields. Hello, 18 Summers Tribe. Today, we're speaking with Hunter Clark Fields. She is a mindful mama mentor. Hunter is the creator of the Mindful Parenting Course, host of the Mama Mindful podcast. I believe she said with over 300 episodes at this point. So quite a pool of information, knowledge, wisdom. Definitely recommend checking it out. And the widely followed best-selling book, Raising Good Humans, A Mindful Guide to Breaking the Cycle of Reactive Parenting and Raising Kind, Confident Kids. What's really great about this interview that we had with Hunter is that we talk about not just raising mindful children, but also being super mindful ourselves. Because I think sometimes as parents or spouses, we worry a lot about what the other person's doing, making our kids have good manners, but are we using good manners? Do we want to raise mindful people, but are we mindful? And so just really going in and taking and dismantling and bringing awareness to where you are at in your place, healing some things that maybe you brought into your parenting and into your life, and then moving forward and instilling better practices in our children. Please join us today in welcoming Hunter. Thanks so much for being here. Hey, Hunter, how are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm hanging in there in a dark winter.
Oh, wonderful. Well, thanks for being here today. It's great to see you and to get to talk about being a mindful mama.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And I'm sure your wisdom goes far past mothers and to fathers or aunts, uncles, grandparents. I know that you take a generational approach to the advice that you give and the mentorship that you offer.
So yeah, I'm interested in changing generational patterns, the unhealthy ones, the good ones, let's keep those and pass them along. But we're evolving and learning and growing all the time. Yeah, a lot of times our parenting, we tend to kind of repeat the same patterns that we just go into it and we kind of wing it. And then we are like, okay. And then we just end up repeating sort of the same patterns that our parents and our grandparents, et cetera, did, even if they're not, weren't so healthy or skillful. And it's time for us to, you know, a lot of us are interested in breaking those unhealthy patterns that caused a lot of suffering and start to create more connection and mentally and emotionally healthier kids.
Yeah. Identify one thing is an unhealthy pattern, because I think sometimes it's hard for us to see our blind spots, right? And we end up in these patterns. And do you have any telltale signs or anything that any guideposts that help you identify what an unhealthy pattern would be?
Well, I think that they're often like screamingly clear. They say our kids are they're like our teachers, and also our difficulties are our teachers, right? Like when we are struggling, when we're yelling, when we're disconnected, those are all these times when we're maybe in an unhealthy pattern. Like for instance, if we're responding to something that may be objectively kind of minor and it feels like unacceptable and outrageous to us, like we have an outsized response to something that our kids may have said or done, then that's often a clue that we have a trigger inside of us. We have some baggage inside of us that is leading to that experience. So for me, so all this work came about like because I was struggling. Like I'm not naturally like an amazing parent, you know. I was actually like really having a very hard time. And when my daughter, who was 18 months, 2 years old at the time, started kind of walking and talking and jogging back and resisting what I had to say, this temper came out of me, this like frustration and anger. And it was my father's anger. I could see it, you know, and I yelled at her and I could see I scared her, you know. I mean, it wasn't just like one and done, but it was like, I could see that I was scaring my child or creating like a disconnection. I could see that she was scared and it was heartbreaking for me and shameful. And I just was terrible. And I had this moment of like, okay, I'm either going to just the helpless, pathetic puddle on the floor because I'm like doing such a terrible job at this, or I can learn something. And I could really see, I started to introspect, and I had started to study mindfulness before this, and I started to sort of like go back to it. And I could see that, oh, you know, like she's having these big feelings. In me, it triggered this feeling of it felt unacceptable to me. Like it felt completely unacceptable. Like it was just had to stop it, right? Like, and that feeling was in me because when I was little and I had those big, same big feelings, that was the message I was giving me through my father's temper, was like that it's unacceptable to sort of like have these feelings. And I could see that I was perpetuating the same pattern, but it wasn't like a choice that I made. No one was like, I think I'll just like yell at my kids. No one does that. It's not a choice that we make. We may even actively have just chosen to do something else. But, you know, these triggers are in us, right? Like our issues are in our tissues, as they say. It really, your body holds these things, these patterns. Our brain creates patterns. And so it takes starting to be aware, and the awareness to start to see, oh, this is what's going on for me. We have to be able to see it with compassion, because when we see these challenges and things in ourselves with judgment, that leaves us unable to grow and change, right? So we have to see clearly what's going on with us. We have to see this with compassion. And then we start to have to use the tools and the things that are out there to make the changes that are, so then we can choose, right? Like that's what we want. We want to be able to choose how we'd like to respond to our kids. We don't want to just be driven by autopilot and driven by old unhealthy patterns that are just in us from our culture or our family or whatever.
Well, how do you use, and that's, this is, I mean, really powerful, especially since it can happen time and time again to all of us. As you said, the issues are in the tissues. How do you use mindfulness to break that pattern? So can you give an example? You know, you're starting to feel that welling up. What's happening with that? And how is mindfulness blocking you from bringing back your father or my father or however? How does that work?
Sure. Well, so we have these patterns, right? Like they're just in us. We didn't choose them, but we also have neuroplasticity, right? We're always growing and changing, and whatever we practice grows stronger. And so the way mindfulness helps in those moments, it helps in kind of two ways. So the first way is kind of if we can build a practice, right? So we build a muscle of non-reactivity. We build the ability to pause. So if we don't, if we're just kind of practicing like, I'm getting swept away and my nervous system's having a stress response and now I don't have access to my whole brain and that all happens, what we have to do is build the ability and the capability within us to be able to kind of stop that runaway train. And that a steady mindfulness practice, it does a bunch of things that are amazing. Like it reduces anxiety, reduces depression, helps you sleep better, improves health outcomes, all these amazing things. But for parents, what's really cool about it is that it increases impulse control. And so you sit there, you're sitting quiet, you notice how crazy your brain is, you bring it back to the present moment again and again and again. And what you're doing, it's like kind of going to the gym and building a muscle of impulse control, of non-reactivity. So then when you get to that moment, you're not just depending on like, this is how I would like to do it. You have a little bit of muscle behind it. So you have some more capability. So that is the way it helps kind of like in the long term. And then in the short term, what mindfulness does is we're practicing to bring our attention to the present moment with an attitude of kindness and curiosity. And it builds clearer thinking. It builds more compassion. And so then in some of those moments, as that train starts to run away, we can start to say, oh, I'm starting to feel frustrated. And then it's like, oh, bing, bing, bing. Like then you start to look back at yourself and see what's happening for you rather than just being so caught up in the thoughts. You can kind of like, if your thoughts are like a waterfall and you're normally just under the waterfall, you're like in the water. And with mindfulness practice, it helps us to kind of step out in front of the waterfall and be like, oh, look, there's a waterfall right here. Right. So in those moments, we can start to say, oh, I'm starting to get frustrated. We can start to see that pattern before we're lost. And that doesn't happen overnight. It's a practice that happens over time, but we interrupt the pattern simply by noticing it. That's actually the most powerful pattern interrupter, is to say, oh, I'm feeling frustrated, I'm starting to lose it. And then you're like, aha, then I can make a choice and start it, choose a different action.
So just noticing can get you that first little bit of space to be able to make a different decision, which is interesting.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Just noticing, if you think of your brain is like a neural network, right? And all those patterns and habits from the past are like, they're like kind of well-worn grooves, quite literally, like what very myelinated grooves in the brain where neurons have fired together. And just noticing it changes, just interrupts that well-worn groove, and you can start to practice something new.
Now, what if we're talking about awareness and acknowledgement, really, they go hand in hand. And I'm just wondering, you reference how to help parents not lose their shit or to have an awareness when they do. What if your partner doesn't have an awareness that they lose their shit? You know what I mean? Like, I think sometimes it's like when you parent with another person and you're trying to do your practice and do your thing, like how can you, because sometimes we think, oh, well, it's not as bad as my dad was, or it's not as bad as such and such down the road. How do we get out of those types of patterns or of accepting it because it's not as bad?
Well, it's hard. Like, it is much easier to see your partner's unskillful behavior as your own. Like, it is so, so much easier. So in mindful parenting, we teach like these communication barriers and all these different things, and we just see it in our partners so clearly. It's so much easier to see in them than it is in ourselves. And I can be really frustrating. And especially if you're seeing an unhealthy pattern, like if you're seeing your partner lose it and you're just seeing them yell and you're seeing disconnection happening between them and your children, and you're seeing that it's causing all this difficulties. And also the only zone of locus of control that we have is really ourselves, right? So we have to, you know, you can lead a horse out to water, but you can't make him drink, right? You can practice in yourself. You can start to change in yourself. And one of the things that happens, like in mindful parenting, when people come and their partner has a different parenting style, is that it does take time. Like, but often after time, the partner will start to say, okay, they'll start to see, like, I'm not as effective with my kids as my partner is, who's doing this other crazy stuff. And they'll start to get curious and start to wonder. But I mean, if you see your partner having behaviors like red flag behaviors, like corporal punishment, and that's not okay, that might be a strong red line for you, you know, that may be something you have to address with them, and you can do it as skillfully as you can, start to understand where they're come from. And you can bring the same attitudes of kindness and curiosity to listening and understanding what's going on with your partner. And when you seek to understand before you then seek to be understood, that really kind of opens the door for them to maybe hear you. If you're really trying to be curious and understanding about where they're coming from first.
Yeah.
Good advice.
What are you thinking right now? Obviously, the last 2 years has been different for all families. It's just been something that none of us grew up in. Maybe our grandparents saw it way back in Spanish flu, but this was a different time. What were you seeing as the biggest kind of thorn in the side right now for families and keeping mindfulness? And what were you encouraging them to do to take it head on and get through it?
It's been horrifying. It's like, so, I mean, the thing that I've seen that I thought was really bad before the pandemic has gotten so much worse is just our isolation. I mean, I thought that was bad before the pandemic, and it was. And then it just exacerbated this problem where we're like, you get like one adult home with small children for hours and days at a time. And it's like, that's like a recipe for insanity. You know, like you're just the only adult around for small children. It can be really, really like psychologically, physically taxing. Like it can be very, very intense. And that has gotten a lot worse. And it's hard. It's hard to kind of see what to do sometimes there. I think that what I encourage people to get help if they can, if they feel safe getting help, to not, we have this, especially for women, you know, we have this martyrdom culture where this like, I should be able to do it all. I should be able to do it all perfectly. I should be able to do it all the time. And I should like love being with my kids all the time. And we don't. And that's okay. That's normal. Like kids' behaviors can be irritating and frustrating and messy and loud and all of these things. And that's totally normal. It's really, we become better parents when we can have our own lives, where we can have breaks, when we can have time away, you know, when we can have like a better balance in our lives. And it's become incredibly hard for some people to do that. But what I encourage people to do is at least hold that as like a North Star. The time, at least, especially when your kids are little, can be very, very intense and very taxing. And you shouldn't have to do it all on your own. So it's really hard to get help. Sometimes we feel like we shouldn't get help, but what I really encourage people to do is know that you're a better parent when you take a break. Hold it as your North Star that I can have a more balanced life. I can have more balance with my partner. I can have balance maybe with like a really cool neighborhood teenager that comes for 3 hours a few days a week. I can do push yourself to like write down 10 different ideas to get help and get support for you and your kids. And, you know, 10 is a lot. Like that forces you to be really creative. Like do it as if your doctor said, like, listen, you got to get help for your kids. Otherwise you have a fatal disease, right? You need that time. Like it's really the time when our kids are little is the most intense. And it is the time when we do need breathing space, right? We need a little regular breathing space from it. And I think that's really, really vital. So hold that as your North Star.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely.
Now in your book, Raising Good Humans, as I see behind you there, you discuss breaking these generational traumas. And so in theory, in raising good humans, we're also, we don't just mean like the little humans we're responsible for, but also ourselves, right? And all those around us. So can you tell us a little bit of what led you to writing the book and really what your mission is with that?
Sure. I mean, for me, it coincides with what I teach in mindful parenting in Raising Good Humans. And what it is for me is like, I saw really comes from like my own struggle. I was really struggling, as I told you. And I remember at the time listening, seeking out some really great parenting coaches and finding some wonderful advice about how to respond that like I simply could not implement when my stress response was going crazy. And that, you know, and I learned a lot about that. Like we really don't have access to our whole brain when we're triggered and our stress response is happening. So it really brings together those two pieces. It brings together the piece about the inner work that we need to do, how to calm our reactivity. How do we take care of our own difficult feelings, right? Like most of us weren't taught that. We were just said, taught like, don't have them. How to have some self-compassion. All that inner work, how to look at our triggers, to bring that together with, there's some really great communication advice that has been around for a little while now, like since the 70s, how to listen, how to communicate, how to solve problems without resorting to, you know, if you don't do this, I'm going to put you on the naughty seat or I'm going to take away your iPad, right? Like, so bringing together that communication advice, those communication skills with that inner work so that you can actually implement it. And so it really brings those things together. And so for me, it answered the question, like the book is all about answering the question in mindful parenting of like, how? Okay, I want to respond that way, but how? How do you do it? How answers that question? How?
Really getting down to those roots, right? Where you, if you just chop off the top, you're not ever really healing the core.
Yeah. And the thing is like someone can tell you, you should respond to your kid without yelling and calmly, and you should respond empathetically. But then if you just do that kind of on the surface, it's not going to land with your kids. So for instance, if you're feeling really frustrated and you see your kid doing something and you're like, sometimes seems like you don't want to play with your brother right now, whatever it is, right? Like, but there, you're trying to be calm and you're trying to be empathetic, but it's just, their kids have amazing BS meters. Like they can see when you're emotionally really incongruent. So if you just have like, I'm just going to respond this way on the surface, it's not effective because your kids are seeing through. And so to respond, it really respond authentically is really what we want to do. And so that requires us to be able to practice to regulate our emotions. If we do want to respond calmly, we have to kind of feel a little calmer, to be able to take care of our feelings, to model that. It requires all of that to then be in the place of that peaceful presence so that then we can respond in that way. Just doing it on the surface doesn't work so well.
Now, you reference a beginner's mind. Yeah. And how can we hold a beginner's mind? Tell me more about that.
I love the idea of beginner's mind. And the idea is, I think it comes from a teacher named Shunryu Suzuki, and the idea is to look at everything as if you were a beginner. And I love the idea of kind of like imagining, like, the next time you go in to see your kids, like, imagine you've been like beamed down from another planet and you're like, who are you today? Right? Like, and because the truth is, just like you never step into the same river twice, like, your child is never the same person twice. And we tend to just, you know, our brains tend to take shortcuts, right? We tend to go on autopilot. We tend to make assumptions. We use labels. We do all these things. And that's really helpful. Like, we never have to decide fresh each morning to brush our teeth. Like, we just do it. But it is not helpful when we are not really seeing our children, right? And that doesn't have to be all the time. Like, you don't have to be like 100% like, oh, my gorgeous child, who are you? I love you. No, but like sometimes, maybe a couple times a day, you want to be able to say, be able to really see and really hear your child and bring this attitude of curiosity to them. Like, we live in a culture steeped in judgment and we tend to make assumptions. And so if we can start to counteract that and instead say, I wonder what's going on for you. Who are you? Bring this attitude of curiosity to moments. It helps us to be open to discover what is really there rather than what we've already decided is there. And it's such a gift to our kids to be able to do that, because what they really want from us is to be seen and heard and accepted for who they are. So if we can be non-judgmentally accepting of who they are, like, really heartfelt and curious about who they are, like, that's a real gift to give to really any human being, to give them that and, you know, to really, really see them and really be there with them and to not be off in our heads planning our to-do list or planning dinner or planning our next vacation to Florida where you guys are.
And I would say the same can hold true for spouses, right? I mean, yes, to do the same thing every now and then and to see them new and exciting and lovely and valuable, just like put that same shine on when you interact with other people too, because really we're all showing up each day fresh and new.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, word curiosity too, the way that you use that. We use that in a lot of our stuff, our marriage, our kids' education. We do a lot of alternative education. The best way to learn, we think, is to raise curiosity. And so we use curiosity, not only our relationship with them, but actually trying to learn together with them. That word is definitely a key adjective for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's so beautiful. It's true. It's like the kind of the course is packaged in this parenting course or this book. But the truth is, it's really like their universal relationship skills. You know, can we be like, who are you today? And see you with fresh eyes, be a beginner. I think that can be great.
I guess that's really the true heart of mindfulness, right? Just taking the wonder and sitting with it. So.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks.
And I wanted to talk about, before we have our finale question, I wanted to talk about acknowledgement. You seem to stress a lot on the importance of acknowledgement. Do you want to kind of explain that to the tribe?
Absolutely. Yeah. So acknowledgement is acknowledging things as they are, right? And that is at the heart of mindfulness. So seeing things clearly, seeing things as they are, and acknowledging that. Acknowledgement goes hand in hand with acceptance. Like, okay, this is how I feel right now. This is how you feel right now. Acknowledgement is a thing that we often really miss as parents. It's like a ball that we drop often as parents. When our kids come to us with a problem, or really anytime they talk to us, they're reaching out and they want to be seen and they want to be heard, right? And so say your child comes to you with a problem that, you know, I don't know what it is. So-and-so took my skateboard. I'm so upset, blah, blah, blah. And oftentimes we skip the step of just acknowledging like how this feels, what's happening for this person. And instead we want to, it feels uncomfortable to kind of sit in other people's problems. We don't want, especially our kids, like we don't want them to feel upset or be upset. So we try to just kind of jump to solving their problems, or sometimes we dismiss their problems. So we might say, oh, well, why don't you blah, 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 blah. Okay, let's go do this. Right. And really the step of like, oh, that sucks. That must have been so frustrating. Like, that's the step, like acknowledging the feelings is a step of really seeing and hearing person, the whole person in front of you. And it's similarly like with, imagine like a child comes to you, and even like a little kid, and they bump their toe on the playground. Oh, ow, ow, I'm so hurt. Oh, and you know, a lot of times we're like, oh, you're okay, you're fine, whatever. Like, we dismiss this problem. It's okay, you'll be fine. But to really acknowledge their feelings, even if to us, we know that this is going to be fine in a second, if you just walk away and get distracted and something else, we know that it may be fine. But to the person in front of you, it's not fine. They're having a real upset moment. So we can say, oh, ow, I bet that hurt. And then that, you know, that little kid could say, yeah, it did, and maybe get a hug. And then they run off and they're fine. But sometimes if we don't acknowledge like what's happening, that boo-boo can get worse and worse and worse until you finally acknowledge what's happening, right? And it's the same like I with our feelings, right? Like when we're having those upset feelings, to be able to be with our kids having upset feelings, but same with ourselves. If I'm starting to get frustrated or irritated, if I can just acknowledge that, if I can say, oh, I'm starting to feel really irritated right now, oh, you know, it's like there's a sense of relief that comes from just saying what is, and then I can kind of take care of it. But just even just acknowledging the reality of a situation, it really provides a sense of relief for all parties involved.
I think it offers that validation too, you know, and in spouse relationships, friendships, any type of relationship, you know, when you feel seen and you feel validated, you really can further that connection. So whether it's absolutely with your child, and I do think it builds those trust muscles too, right? Because if our children are hurting and we say, you're okay, then they think to themselves, oh, so even when I hurt, that means I'm okay. And then they re-solidify for themselves, right? Their whole lives. Then you get 40 years down the road and you're like, well, maybe I'm not okay. And it's much worse than it is if you just continue to validate these good little humans all along the way and let them know that, okay, I might not have thought it hurt, but they do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's super powerful.
Well, I think I know we could keep going on. Before I ask our finale question, Hunter, where can people best find you?
Well, they can find Raising Good Humans anywhere books are sold, and the Mindful Parenting course, all of that is at mindfulmamamentor.com, and they can listen to the Mindful Mama podcast.
Excellent.
Wherever you listen to this podcast.
Tell me a little bit about your podcast real quick for our listeners to jump over. What do you...
Well, we've been going since 2014, so we have over 300 something episodes. Awesome. Talked to some great speakers over the years, really, really wonderful people, mix of mostly interviews, some solo episodes, some coaching calls. Really, it's been a joy to build a community through the podcast. It's really, really lovely.
That's awesome.
Great. Yeah, well, check it out. Well, good. Well, our finale question normally is, we all have been asked the question, what would you tell your 21-year-old self? And that's a good question, brings about some good clarity and ideas. But we started asking ourselves in the beginning of the pandemic to help better handle bigger things, was saying, what would our 75-year-old self say to us right now? So, you know, way down the road, what would 75-year-old Hunter give advice to Hunter today, or to us, or to anyone?
I would probably tell myself to not worry. You know, just keep putting one foot in front of the other, that you're on the path. And yeah, if my 75-year-old self could wave a magic wand and take care of all my 43-year-old self worry, that's what she would do.
Take away the worry. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here today. And thank you for guiding mamas and all parents through mindfulness and that further healing. I think it's really important.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you for having me. Thank you for sharing your voice and your time and your journey with everyone. And I've really enjoyed being here.
Awesome. Take care. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.